If you have not already opened your Bibles, let me invite you to open them there to Mark chapter 3. We're going to look at two instances here of how Jesus dealt with the Sabbath in his day. The Sabbath day, of course, is the seventh day of the week. It is our Saturday on our calendar. It was the last day of the week. It was the day that God rested after creation. It was the day that was placed as a holy day to be remembered by the Jews among the Ten Commandments. God's rule was, keep it holy. It's to be a day of rest. And it was intended as a blessing for those who had worked hard all week. And it included their servants. It even included their animals. But by the first century, it had been hedged round by all sorts of extra rules and regulations. Looking back at some of these rules and regulations, from our perspective, it almost seems laughable. One of the rules said, if you spit on the Sabbath, be sure you spit on a rock and not on the soil. Because if you spit on the soil, you have made mud, and that's creating mortar, and that's work. The rules are just a variety of fantastic extremes. Well, they had defined work under 39 different headings. And what had been intended as a blessing had become a burden. And they split hairs, and they examined details, and they questioned actions until a whole culture was walking on eggshells on the Sabbath rather than enjoying the blessing that God had given them. The scribes had codified it, they had solidified it, and they had petrified it. And the Sabbath had originally been given for the human need for rest. Therefore, it was made holy when human need was met on it. Now, this first Sabbath incident is actually the one that precedes what Holland just read for us. And it appears to have been an innocent situation that brought up the ridiculous rules that surrounded the Sabbath. And it's actually back in chapter 2. So let's back up a little bit this morning, and we want to look at that Sabbath incident and then the one that was read for us just a moment ago. Back up to chapter 2, verse 23. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, what they are doing is unlawful on the Sabbath." And he answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need in the days of Abiathar the high priest? He entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.'" They had walked through the grain fields. They had grabbed some grain from the stalk. And some of you have probably done this in a wheat field. You can rub your hands together and it'll get the hull off, and then you can eat the grain that way. And so they just grabbed a handful of that and threw it in their mouth. And the leaders, the spiritual leaders, knew that that had been codified and that had been recognized and that had been hemmed in, and that to do anything that even smacked of harvesting was a sin against God, a violation of the Sabbath. And weren't they plucking grain? Weren't they harvesting the grain? Weren't they eating the grain? That was a violation of the Sabbath. And Jesus wouldn't have any of it. That flew in the face of God's original intention for the Sabbath. Well, they expected Jesus to put a stop to that sinful behavior immediately. But instead, Jesus justified the actions of his disciples before these religious leaders. And he used the Old Testament story of David as a precedent for what they were doing that day in the grain field. Back in 1 Samuel chapter 21, we read about the story of David. David was fleeing for his life from King Saul, and he and his men had been traveling, running for their lives. They were exhausted, they were tired, they were hungry. And they came to Jerusalem, and there was the tabernacle, and they went into the tabernacle. And there on the table was the showbread, 12 loaves of bread. Each week, this bread was baked fresh. It sat there on the table. At the end of the time, the priests were allowed to take the showbread and eat it themselves. But it was only for the priests. That was part of the law of God. Yet David came in there, and he saw that showbread on the table, and he was starving. His men were starving. So he took the bread, and he ate some, and he passed it out to all of his men. And God didn't censor him for that. Jesus was making the point that human need takes precedence over a rigid conformity to law. Now, this incident in which Jesus explained that the Sabbath was created for man, not the other way around, really brings Jesus into a critical point in his ministry. It had begun back in the synagogue with his teaching. Originally, they were amazed at what he taught. Then suspicion was aroused by several things that he said and did. And now, for the first time, we see outright open opposition from these leaders of the Jews. They had asked four questions in the Gospel of Mark, and each one of them with a greater degree of seriousness. Back in chapter 2, verse 7, when the man came down through the roof and Jesus forgave him, they asked the question, who can forgive sins but God alone? And then in chapter 2, verse 17, they ask a second question, why does he eat with sinners and tax collectors? Then in chapter 2, verse 18, they ask, why don't your disciples fast? And now finally in 2:24, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? And in their minds, this was the most serious offense of all. Isn't it ironic that the Sabbath was held on such a high pedestal, that they were so concerned about that, that that was the straw, in effect, that broke the camel's back as far as their view of Jesus? I would have expected what Jesus said when he forgave sins to have been the ultimate crime. And yet the Sabbath was more important to them than one who blasphemed God, at least in their eyes. Well, they perceive this Sabbath violation as the ultimate break between Jesus and Judaism. Note down in chapter 3, verse 6, what they intend to do. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Well, in chapter 3, Jesus takes on the role, really, of a scandal maker. Several years ago, the film came out about the Scottish hero, William Bruce, movie Braveheart, and he was determined to take on the might of England. And he didn't wait for the king's forces to come to him. He went out and he found the king's forces and he engaged them. He taunted them in the battle. And that's almost the picture of what we see Jesus doing here. This first Sabbath incident seems innocent enough. They were walking through the fields. They were challenged by that. But now Jesus appears to go out of his way to provoke his opponents and to challenge them. One English writer, N.T. Wright, says that in the minds of the Jewish leaders, Jesus drives a coach and horses through the precedent of the Sabbath. Read with me again the passage that was just read for us. He says, another time he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there, and some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus. So they watched him closely to see if he would heal them on the Sabbath. Jesus could not have missed these men. They were Pharisees. They were part of the ruling party of the day. And as such, they always took the preeminent seats. Jesus would criticize them on another occasion because they always came and took the front seats rather than the back seats. So there they would have been in the synagogue on the very front row. They dressed differently than all the others, and they had their phylacteries, scripture verses, and little boxes tied on their wrists and tied on their forehead because they were holy people, and they wanted everyone to know they were holy people. And so here they all are on the front row of the synagogue, and Jesus could not fail to see them. And he sat down there, and he knew their hearts, and he knew what they wanted to do. And in spite of that, that man that everyone knew who had the shriveled hand, one of the other gospels said it was his right hand, Jesus calls him out in front of the whole group. And he does the very thing that his opponents are hoping that he would do. In Matthew's fuller account, Matthew says that Jesus said to them, "If any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep?" And then Jesus answers his own question that he had asked them about, is it right to do good or to do evil? Is it right to save life or to kill? Jesus declares in Matthew's account, in Matthew 12:12, "Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." And then he heals the man in front of them. Jesus knew their thoughts. He knew what was going on. They were plotting to kill him, and there they were on the Sabbath day. Of all days, the day they held most sacred. And in their minds, they were hoping Jesus would do this so they could begin the plans to murder him. And yet here Jesus was, the Son of Man, determined to bless the life of an individual who desperately needed the help of God. Jesus was planning to do good. They were planning to do evil. And so he asked these questions. Verse 4 of chapter 3. Putting the man on exhibit there in front of them, he asked the question, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. Through these two questions, he exposed the evil intent of their heart. And their silence kindled the anger of Jesus. Now Jesus goes ahead, and he does what in their minds is the unthinkable. He works on the Sabbath. He heals a man on God's holy day. They didn't care that it was a miracle from God. They didn't care that this is something that defies the laws of nature. They didn't question how could this man have done this, but by the power of God. All they cared about is that he broke our rules and he must die. Now let me share some application with you, and the lesson is yours. Those guardians of the law had turned what God gave as a blessing into a burden. Later, they would do the same thing with the law of purification. According to Jesus, were teaching as if it was the doctrine of God, simple teachings of man. They required people to go through this elaborate hand-washing process every time they went out in public in case they touched a Gentile or touched something that a Gentile touched and had been rendered unclean. There's not a verse in the Bible that ever says you must wash your hands. And yet they required it as part of the law. And Jesus says, you're teaching things and treating them as if they come from God when they come from you. Well, they had misunderstood the Sabbath. And Jesus gave an example of the great king of Israel, David, who actually violated the technical law of God. That showbread was only for priests. And yet David violated that law of God to meet a human need. How much more do we today need to be flexible with our own rules and policies? Rules and regulations and policies are good things. They're simply orderly ways to meet the needs of a congregation or of a group or of individuals. And they are perfectly right when they're used in this way. But when a rule actually ends up opposing the meeting of a need, then the rule has to go. People are always more important than policies. The story is told, true story, about a church here in the Midwest. And a young minister was hired, and he came in, and they had a group that was there, and he had a projector that had, he had some film clips of some mission trips and things like that, and this was a number of years ago, and that was not commonly done at the time, and he showed some movie clips, and pretty soon word was out in the congregation, boy, he's bringing some new stuff in here, and we don't know about this, and so he was called in. He was talked to. And he said, well, I understand that someone before me said that someone had shown some slides earlier. And one of the men said, as long as it's not moving, it's okay. But if it's moving, that's sin. You know, and we laugh at that. And it is laughable. And future generations will look back on things like that the way we look back on the Jews and their ridiculous extremes with the Sabbath. An over-reliance on rules, though, leads to legalism. And that's what happened with these good things, God-given rules, but they led to legalism. J. Stoll Moody, in his book, talked about 10 things that are wrong with legalism. And listen to this list. He said, new laws continually need to be made for new situations. You'll never have all the bases covered if you're going to rely on rules to cover all the eventualities. Secondly, accountability to God is replaced by accountability to man. Thirdly, it reduces a person's ability to discern. You don't have to think anymore. If it's all rules, you just go by those, and you never think through the heart's response to God in the situation. Fourthly, it creates a judgmental spirit. Boy, that was the very attitude that was so prevalent in the time of Christ. They all judged everybody else by how good they were at keeping all the rules that had been attached to these various commandments. Fifthly, it confuses personal preference with divine law. Another rule that they had circumvented of God. God had said, take care of your parents. And they had said, well, if we will donate this money, we'll call that Corban. That was what they called it, Corban. And that's allowable. And so they would make these very generous donations, and they would have their name put up. A building would be dedicated to them. And they would neglect their own parents. And Jesus says, you're breaking the whole intent of the law. Well, that was their personal preference. They wanted the glory out of it. Sixthly, it produces inconsistencies. You can't have rules made up by men that'll cover all the bases and do it fairly. Seventh, it creates a false standard of righteousness. You know, we need to be careful. Sometimes Christianity has been distilled to those who come to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and keep all the rules, then you're a Christian in good standing. You can do all of that and still not be a Christian in good standing if your heart's not right. There can be a false standard of righteousness when you look only at the externals. And that's the eighth criticism, is that this kind of an approach deals only with externals. Ninthly, it becomes a burden. And so serving God is a matter of all these rules that you've got to keep, and you're never sure whether you're doing them all correctly. And so worship is a burden, and serving God is a burden. And there are many people today who will not darken the doors of a church because they look at Christianity as a horrible, heavy burden that no one can carry. And then tenthly, the reason that legalism is wrong is it was rejected by Jesus himself. At a Christian college, not too far from here, a number of years ago, there were Bible studies that had begun to take place in the girls' dorm. And several girls had been baptized, and there was a great sense of excitement there on the campus, and these studies were going on. And one evening as they were studying, the studies went on a little bit later than normal, and they went on at 10:30. And suddenly the dorm mother showed up looking like a thunderstorm. And she said, "Girls, you know the rules. You've got to be in your rooms at 10:30. Everybody break this thing up." And someone said, can you let us finish this? This is important. It's good. She was prepared to break up something wonderful that was going on from God for the sake of a rule that had been in place for years. Well, she was persuaded otherwise, thank goodness. But that's the danger of this approach. People can stand on rules in the face of a greater good from God. F.F. Bruce penned these words, and I want to close with them. "There are some people who find it easier to have a set of rules. When a practical problem arises, they consult the rules and know what to do. But if they have to decide what action best fulfills the purpose of the law, that involves thought, and thought of this kind, with the personal accountability that accompanies it, is a difficult exercise for them." Jesus challenged the most sacred law of his day in going to the heart of what the Sabbath was about. Let me tell you, everything God has given to you and I, whatever law it is, whatever commandment it is, it may seem burdensome to us initially, but if you look at the intent of that, it always has our best interests at heart. God never asks us to do anything that is not for our ultimate blessing. And when we look at the heart of all God's requests, we'll see that and understand that, and we'll keep human needs, and the greatest need of all is the need for forgiveness that Jesus offers through the cross. So we want to end this morning by again offering the invitation that he has offered to us. He intends for our life to be a blessing. He intends for our life to be the abundant life that he spoke of. And he intends for the best life yet to be the one in which he comes to take us home to be with him. If this morning you need to respond to him, if you need prayer, we invite you to come while we stand and while we sit.